Well, thank you everyone for coming to our session. It's myself, Crystal, and Ricky. We're going to talk to you a little bit about what we have both learned through our work and our own individual experiences of the NDIS and the planning process. If we can, we might touch on some issues around how you can manage your plan, the type of things that people are asking for, and the types of things that we know are getting funded in the context of, you know, always bearing in mind the individual needs that every person has, because as has been talked about quite a lot already, you know, we don't want to go in there and say that, well, my friend got this, so I want that too. It's all about your individual situation. But there are some... This is a whole new system, so we need to put it into some sort of context. So that's what we'll try and do today. We'll also be talking a bit about the work that BCA is doing around some systemic advocacy issues with things that we've noticed with the NDIS and that have been pointed out to us. And we really want to get some input from everyone in the room today, because as you know, we do have Blind Citizens New South Wales and Blind Citizens Australia has some funding which we will be using to run workshops in New South Wales and Victoria, and we hope we will be able to do them in other states as well going down the track, specifically on NDIS and My Aged Care and helping people who are blind and vision impaired learn how to engage with both of those systems. So BCA has just recruited a project officer, Sally Orish, and she'll be working out of the New South Wales office of BCNSW in Sydney, and she will be getting some guidance and direction from myself and from Lauren Henley. We really want these workshops to be valuable to people and to have content in them that is what people actually want to know. So we want to get some of that. We have got lots of feedback already, but I'm sure there's stuff that we haven't heard about, and especially now as people are getting plans, there's new things coming up all the time. So we want to be a place where we can capture that information, put together some really useful resources that we can use in those workshops, and roll them out across the place, starting in New South Wales, the ACT and Victoria, and then seeing where we go from there. So I guess we'll do, if we can, if we have a radio mic and someone to run it around, just a quick roll call so we know who's in here. And then I think I'll start off with going through the NDIA's definition of reasonable and necessary, and then we can frame all of our conversation, I think, on that. Okay, does someone have a mic? Can we?
Yes, we've got a mic.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Okay.
Donna Purcell.
Oh, sorry, you should have
gone next. Ricardo Bocelli.
Martin Stewart.
Kim Finn.
Katrina Stewart.
Darren Bretsky.
Steve Richardson.
Ros Matthews.
Vanessa Ransley.
Rocco Kutry.
Trudy Ryle.
Brendan Donoghue, Queensland.
Annette Holden.
Jess Bly.
John Trustlove.
Debbie Cook.
Glenn King.
Steve Patterson.
Bernadette Packer.
Janine Lord.
Paul Price.
Carmel Jolly.
Bernadette
Jolly.
Trifecta. Bill Jolly.
I get all the Jollies, yay.
Stephen Belbin.
I get three of them.
Annette Ferguson.
Ben Wilson.
Vicky Jolly.
Four.
Deborah Simons. Bridget Jolly.
Graham Innes.
Janine Sardou.
Katrina Taylor.
Tess Whelan.
Tian Taylor.
Troy Gladwell.
Jennifer Parry.
Sandra Wibberley.
Amanda Ackett.
Namoy Malcolm.
Jess Richards.
Chelsea Bartlett.
Lauren Hayes.
That's it.
And?
All right. And Ricky Chaplin.
I wish I didn't do that now. Now I'm nervous. There's lots of people. So I'm going to start off with just reading what the NDIA's website says about reasonable and necessary supports. Reasonable and necessary supports are funded by the NDIS in a range of areas which may include education, employment, social participation, independence, living arrangements, and health and well-being. These supports will help participants to, and then it's got a list, pursue their goals, objectives and aspirations, increase their independence, increase social and economic participation, and develop their capacity to actively take part in the community. I think that pretty much covers everything. It goes on to talk about a whole bunch of other stuff, but I don't think that's really necessary for our conversation. Do you want to jump in?
I think in reading that, like, it's like sort of glossing over it. So when you think about setting goals and, you know, reaching your objectives and stuff like that, it all sounds great, but I think where people are coming unstuck and where we need to and, you know, where we intend to work with people is, how do you break that down? That's the big challenge.
So that's exactly the issue that I think a lot of people are finding, isn't it? I mean, that sounds like it should be pretty straightforward, but that's not how things have been playing out, and it's a whole new way of thinking about the type of support and services that we need to be able to do the things that we want, and also what we want to be able to do the things that we want, because that's the whole point of the NDIS, isn't it, Ricky, is to give the control back to us.
I think it's about, you know, there's lots of things that we've maybe had pipe dreams about, thinking about what we'd like to be able to do if we could. This is our chance to actually seize the day and think about, well, what do we actually need to put these things in place? What supports do we actually need? And it may not even be funded supports. This is actually an opportunity to plan how it is that you're going to go about taking your life to the next level. And it might even be finding resources within our own community. And I talked to a deafblind forum of people that I work with just over a week ago about this. We've got some amazing resources within our own group here, and we could help each other out with this, and we could actually come up with ways to be able to do that and perhaps access some ILC funding to do some stuff like that, as well as the individual stuff. So I think it's very much about looking at what you want to do and planning how are you going to do it. And I think that's where people are coming unstuck, is that they will immediately jump to a piece of equipment or that kind of thing. And really, where the input of an advocate can help is to actually look at, are there other ways that we could do this? Is there something I haven't thought about that, you know, might be a possibility? So I think when you go into this process yourself, and it's like this no matter how skilled you are, I think, you tend to get kind of bogged down in the middle of your own life, and it's a bit hard to see every perspective. But if you've got someone with you who you trust, who's a good communicator, they can actually look into your life and make some observations, and you might take them or you might leave them. But the point is that you're having the conversation. I think that's what this whole planning process is all about.
Yeah. There are some kind of practical ways that you can prepare for your planning meeting. And I have to say that over the last 18 months since I participated in the scheme and got my own plan in January, and have worked with some people in, you know, providing some advocacy in their planning meetings, the first planning meeting you go to doesn't tell you everything that you need to know, because there are different ways of having these conversations. But I've come up with a few things really just that I think are pretty standard across all of the planning meetings that I've attended with people, and Ricky's probably got some things to add. So just to kick off a bit of a conversation about planning, or to continue, I guess, how to prepare for your plan. So the NDIS is all about evidence. So one of these, one of the things I read out just before was in assessing what's reasonable and necessary is how does your ability to achieve, you know, A or B, whatever it is, how is it impeded, I guess, by the functional impact of your disability? So that can be a bit of a hard thing for us to talk about. We're so used to being like, oh, no, and finding workarounds and finding solutions. This is just another one of those things that can help you to come up with some solutions. One of the ladies I worked with, she just said, okay, I've got my people that are going to come to the meeting with me who know me, who can support me. I'm just going to put it all out there, be totally honest. She's like, I don't have to pretend that I'm a super capable person in this meeting. It's a real chance just to be honest about things that are challenges and about the areas that aren't. But you need to have documents to back up what you're asking for. So a lot of people have been going to the service providers that they already use and saying, well, okay, how often do I use guide dogs, for instance, for orientation and mobility in a year? They have all these records of when we've used their service and for how long and what we did. I don't know about you, but I don't remember all that sort of stuff. I just ring them up when I need them to help me learn something.
Yep. And the same goes for transport. So yeah. You can actually ring the TSS scheme in your state and you can get a record of what transport you've used over the last 12 months.
Yeah. So go to your orientation and mobility instructor and say, you know, sit down with me, remind me what I've done for the last 2 years with you, and let's work out, let's have a think about, you know, maybe you're a young person who is transitioning from university and you want to look at maybe moving out of home and going to work. Well, okay, that's what you talk about. And think about how much orientation might you need given your past history to achieve that. Or, you know, maybe you're a person who is planning on selling their house and buying a new one in a new area. Okay, so what are you going to need to learn your new area? And don't be stingy on this stuff. Be honest. Think about, okay, what's this like when I'm really tired, when it's raining, when the buses are cancelled, when the trains don't run, whatever it is, the worst case scenario. And then compare that to the best case scenario and come up with somewhere in the middle. Or just talk about the worst case scenario. Yeah. A lot of people are worried about losing their funding if they don't use it. Yes, that's a possibility, but I think the thing we need to remember about the NDIS is that this is a lifelong scheme. So there are going to be years where you don't use all the funding that's allocated to you, and there are going to be years where you probably should have asked for more if you had have known what was going to happen. We can't plan for everything. The system is trying to allow for things like that, and we can go to reviews. There are issues around that at the moment. Things are taking a while.
Yeah, and I'll talk about that.
And Ricky will talk about that. Yeah. But this is a really new thing, and this is our chance to really put it to the test and make it work for us. So that's one, getting your documents, supporting letters from medical professionals. The NDIA seems to be having some trouble at the moment with understanding the intersection between, say, vision impairment and hearing loss or another disability. So that's something that we've got to work with them on, I think, at an individual level and at a systemic level.
That's right.
And so we're doing that. But get all of the what you think is relevant documentation to support the things you're asking for. And a lot of the first plans are focusing on what the NDIS calls unmet need. And that's basically, what have you got at the moment, and is that working? And if not, you know, why not, and what could be better?
I think I'd like to just talk about the appeals process and the way that that seems to be working at the moment. So, as Crystal mentioned, people with secondary disabilities are coming up against this. So you might get funding for blindness services, for example, but your hearing loss mightn't be taken into account. Even though you've mentioned it in your plan, or you may have mentioned particular equipment you need, that kind of thing, what we're finding is that not everything is getting approved in plans, particularly around equipment and around secondary disability support. So it looks like the appeals process, they're kind of regarding it as par for the course, and they're using the sort of reasonable and necessary criteria as a bit of a gatekeeping process, because unfortunately the NDIA staff aren't necessarily skilled in disability. In fact, 95% of them, I'm told, have no knowledge of disability. So this is what tends to happen. They look at everything through an economic lens. So while we need to fight that systemically, and it's one of my bugbears and something I'll happily submit on until the cows come home, this is how we need to handle it at the moment. We need to regard appeals processes as just part of what we have to do, and we need to be prepared to go through with them. And again, that's where BCA can support you to do that. We don't want to see anybody left alone going through that, because it can be a pretty harrowing process. Mm. I've seen personally how big a toll it can take on families. I would encourage you to always reach out to us for help, and you know, helping you navigate this system while it is the way it is. And we all need to make the best of it. But to do that, we've got to put in some work.
Yeah, thanks, Ricky. Yeah. I've got, what was the other thing I was going to say? Sorry, I've lost my space. So Ricky's right. I mean, people are having issues with elements of their plan, particularly technology requests and that sort of thing. But what the local area coordinators that I've spoken to are saying is to get your technology assessment before you go to your meeting. Now, the problem is that a lot of the service providers now, that I'm aware of at least, are waiting until people have their plan to do those OT assessments and assistive technology assessments, because now they can get paid for it, right? So the way you can, I guess, get around that is to talk about in your meeting all of the things that you're going to talk to the assistive technology person about and the occupational therapist if they ask you to go and do an assessment. Have as many of your supporting documents already, so if you can get an OT assessment beforehand, do that. And book in your assessment for a couple of weeks after your plan will come through. So they have a time frame. The local area coordinators only have a couple of days from the time that they meet with you to get your plan to the planners, and then the planners have a short period of time. I'm not 100% sure of it. It seems to change a little bit, but it's within a couple of weeks to get your plan back to you. And so if you know that you're having your planning meeting on the 17th and then you've booked in your OT assessment or your assistive technology assessment for the 2nd, say, of the next month, it's, I think anyway, fairly reasonable to expect that you might have your plan back by then, or even if you made it 3 weeks, because some of the service providers are having a bit of a wait period. And then basically all they do is say, well, your plan will say something like, okay, well, you've said you want this or you need this stuff for ABC reasons. As soon as you submit the assessment to us, we can have another look at it and allocate the funds. What they won't accept is estimates. So if your service provider has given you an estimate of costs, they might ask you to go back and get an actual quote. So just make sure that any documents you have that are attached to funding requests have quote, that it's a proper quote. So there's a lot of talk about, you know, what do I need? do I need? What do I need? What do you need? How do you need it? Need, need, need. I think we need to have a bit of a discussion about the fact that the NDIS isn't just there to... it is there to assist us, but not just with things like work and study and those sort of things. Any volunteer work that people do, if you're a grandparent who looks after your grandkids 3 days a week while your adult children have to work, which happens to a lot of people now, you know, talk about that sort of stuff. Can you get some support to help you do that? I know of a lady who's in that situation, and she's got support to be able to take her... She looks after her nephew 3 days a week, and he's 18 months old, and he's a really active little boy like they all are, and she wants to be able to take him to local playgroups and playgrounds and stuff, but she can't do it independently. So she's now got funding support in her package to pay for a support worker to drive her and help her with supervising the little boy. It's her job to keep track of him, but the support worker's there to assist with that. So there's those sort of things. We can be creative about this. So I guess with that in mind, I wanted to do a little activity just to get us talking, and then we're going to, I guess, open up for more discussion stuff. But what's something that you really enjoy doing or have always wanted to do but can't quite work out how on your own? Just talk to the person next to you, and I love that we're in theatre-style seating for this. That's good. I'm glad we're in this room. Talk to the person next to you about it, and maybe they can help you come up with something, or you can give them some ideas just for a couple of minutes. All right, guys. I hope you've had enough time.
Attention, everyone.
See, Ricky's got the broadcaster voice I don't.
Oi.
I can't whistle either. Do it again.
Okay, people, let's come back so that we've got some time to open it up for discussion.
Thank you. Does anybody... What we want to do with this activity is to find out some of the things that you enjoy doing, that you want to do, and put it into NDIS terms, if it isn't already, so that we can sort of role play a bit how it turns out in plans. So does anyone want to volunteer to talk about themselves, or if you have permission, talk about your friend next to you?
It's Donna, and this is a conversation both Martin, who's sitting next to me, and I both had. So I have just recently put a plan in place myself, and in me thinking about what I thought in the terms of what did I used to be able to do but I'm no longer doing, and what could the NDIS help to do that. And for me, one of the things was maintaining my health and fitness and being able to run, and I'd stopped running because the partner I was running with couldn't assist anymore. So for me, it was about health and fitness and how I could use the NDIS plan to engage someone to help me with that. And I guess Martin and I were talking about, for me, that's a runner, but for Martin, that might be someone to assist going to the gym, because a lot of gym equipment is inaccessible.
Sorry, that's all
right. Yeah, I think that's right. And what we're talking about here is the goal of achieving fitness. And I think when it comes to that, blind and vision impaired people can be quite disadvantaged, and I feel it's an important area. So you would talk in terms of that is your goal, because they talk about goals.
Yeah, that's an important point. Keep your goals broad. Don't say, I want to go to the gym 3 times a week, because then you'll only get 3 hours of support. But if you say, I want to regain or maintain my health and fitness, then the questions would turn into something, and this actually happened in a couple of meetings. Well, okay, how many hours do you have in your week to dedicate to doing that sort of thing? And the person said, well, I don't know, I work and I do this and I do that, so maybe 5. And they said, okay, well, we'll write down 6 because you've got to get there. That sort of thing. Keep it broad. Don't restrict yourself.
I think, and yeah, rather than looking at what do I need, as Crystal was saying before, reframe the question. So what is it that I want to achieve? How will I go about achieving it?
Good day. Is it working? Yeah. John Truslove here.
Thanks.
Now, my question is, it's to do with, let's say, I want to be a valued family member, being a dad with four kids, and I want to be able to say, right, when the school rings up and says, can you pick your daughter up from school today?
Yeah.
Without paying $60 for a taxi fare there and back.
Yes.
And is that a reasonable thing to ask for?
Totally.
Absolutely.
Yep. Can I give you my personal experience? So I have a 7-year-old son, and one of the things that I specifically spoke about in my plan was the fact that, you know, he's seven. He wants to do activities like play soccer on the weekend, and soccer fields are all over the place. I don't have time to go and organise O&M to get to every soccer field. We find out on Thursday where we're playing on Saturday. And they said, okay, well, how many hours does it take for soccer on Saturday? And I said, well, I don't know, maybe 3, 4. And so that's what gets put into the plan. And then there's something we haven't talked about so much, but is worth a whole nother conversation on its own, is the different ways you can manage your funding. A lot of people are, for their first plan, choosing to be NDIA managed. In my experience, talking to people, and Ricky might agree, I don't know, you can not if you don't want to. But NDIA management basically restricts you to only using services that are registered with the NDIA.
Yeah, that's right.
And for us, as people who are blind, we don't necessarily need the support only of the services that are registered with the NDIA. We want to be able to just, you know, hire a support worker, say, through something like Better Caring or Higher Up, which are online platforms for recruiting your own support workers, and you basically put your job up there. It's like, what's it called?
Airtasker
for disabilities. It's great. You get on there, and, I mean, even if you've got a person who you've been working with for a while in some other capacity, get them to sign up and then hire them through Higher Up or Better Caring. Yeah. That's what I've done.
And if you want to manage your own funds, even to some degree, you can actually build in supports into your plan to be able to do that.
Yep. So there's plan management, which is basically where you pay a third party to manage all the payments and invoicing and that sort of thing for you, which is great if you don't have the confidence on your technology or you don't have the time to do it all. And then there's self-management. Self-management was a bit of an issue in the beginning for some people, but the portal is a lot better. The only issue that I've really found with it at the moment is that you can only invoice after the fact. But you get around that by your invoice from your service provider would usually have a 14 or sometimes a 28-day turnaround of when you can pay it. So what you do is you get your claim. Sorry, you get your invoice from them, jump on the portal, claim the money back. It takes 2 or 3 days for it to get into your account, and then you just pay your bill. So they're scaring people off self-management by saying that you have to pay for things up front. You sort of do, but you sort of don't, if that makes sense. For the support workers. So there's two. There's Better Caring and there's Higher Up. And it's basically you... Yes. Yep.
Is that an app?
I don't think it's an app, but it's a website. The problem with Better Caring at the moment is it isn't totally accessible, so you might need someone to help you get on there, but that's all right. Well, I shouldn't say it's all right. I have told them it's not. I have told them it's not, and I'm continuing that. But it's a very short process. I was able to get the people on the phone to assist me with it, and so that, you know, we got around it. And once you're in there, it's fine. You can use it all. It's just there. Better Caring, I think it's just bettercaring.com.au. Higher Up has an app now, does it? Great, I will check that out. So, you know, there's teething problems, like I said. They've got accessibility, but not quite. I mean, with Better Caring, it was like I could fill in all of the profile, but then I couldn't find the submit button. That type of annoying little silly stuff that they will fix because we'll keep annoying them about it. So back to John's comment about the transport, you can definitely point that out. There are packages of funding for transport. So one of the things that people were worried about was the mobility allowance. Well, there's that too. It's not very much, is it? But the mobility allowance now gets incorporated into your package, but it still goes into your account just as it always has every fortnight. But depending on what you're doing, There are different levels of how much funding you can get. So if you're a parent who's working and, you know, doing all those things, then they're going to give you a bit more than you were getting just on the mobility allowance. But even if you're not working at the moment and you're volunteering and you're just wanting to get out in the community more, maybe you're studying or, you know, anything like that, you can still get the mobility allowance now. Whereas before it was, I think the criteria was you had to be doing something for 8 hours a week. Or
yeah. Glenn. Just if I can go back to the goal planning or the goal arrangements.
Yep.
My situation is my handwriting's so poor that I have trouble with numeracy and education. So I want a computer to improve that handwriting, to take the manual element out of it. Now, I've been told not to ask for a computer because I'll just knock you back straight away. You can go out and buy one. But if I go in for a communication device, because I have a print impairment, if that's a fair assumption, then I've got a better chance. Would that be a fair comment, fair language to you?
Yes, and it's a tricky one. So if you, from my understanding, if you go in, like you said, yes, if you go in and just say, I need a computer, well, the NDIS won't fund sort of everyday items. Computers are pretty standard now for everyone. But they will fund, with the evidence, like I was saying before, the assistive technology to make that computer work for you. But then if you have the evidence to support that it is a communication device, then the outcome might be different. I have had that discussion with a local area coordinator recently who said, no, they're not funding iPads, but, you know, if you can prove that something like an iPhone is a communication device and get your OT basically to back that up, or your audiologist or whoever is going to support you with that.
I've got eye specialists and neurologists.
Yeah, it comes back to evidence.
Yeah, hand-eye coordination, handwriting means I make mistakes in simple mathematical.
Yeah, it all comes back down to the evidence you have.
And really what the job of the OT is to really provide that information that usually specialists like ophthalmologists and that don't. So the ophthalmologist will give you a diagnosis, and we see this even with places like Centrelink, for example. They'll give you a diagnosis, but they won't actually talk about how that diagnosis affects your daily functioning. That's the information that you need.
I've been trying to track specialists in Sydney in this sort of thing, hand-eye coordination, just to build the evidence.
Yeah, I'd say an OT or something like that would help. Do we have any more comments?
I have one.
I'm sure
here.
We do. Yep. Okay, Trudy.
Ricky.
Yep.
Sorry. Hang on. Who's?
This is Namoy.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, Trudy.
Ricky. So I have some basic skills in the kitchen, but I want to get better. Can the NDIS support me to get better in the kitchen? Like, you know, I see stuff on MasterChef, for example. I know that might be...
That could be a goal.
That might sound like a reach for me, considering my skills, but can the NDIS help me out with that?
I sort of only half heard the question.
Can the NDIS help with helping you develop better skills in the kitchen? If you've, say, seen something on MasterChef and now you want to try it at home.
If you need lessons in the sense that your cooking isn't really up to the point where you could happily, well, not happily, but, you know, feed yourself basically sort of thing. That's a good question. Like, when do they actually prepare, you know, teach you how to prepare gourmet meals, or whether they'd regard that as sort of something that anyone could do? They might look at it from an accessibility point of view, given that your own kitchen is going to be the best place to learn how to do it, whereas someone else might be able to get to a cooking class.
Mm.
So they might, or they might give you support to go to a cooking class, that kind of thing. You'd really have to, I think, talk about the situation as it stands and work out the best solution to it. And how that's actually going to happen. And I think this is the kind of depth of conversation that you need to get to sometimes with the planners to get answers to things like that. Because, it's that one, it's a bit of a crossover thing. Yeah, sort of difficult to answer straight off the cuff, because if you wanted to learn basic cooking, then yeah, you could definitely get support with that. But that more advanced stuff, yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
The other thing is you can also get support to, you know, if you're really busy and you're working full time and you just, or whatever, you just don't have the time to do all the cooking yourself. If you identify in your planning meeting that you need support with food preparation, then that's a thing. You can get that. And if you're self-managing, or even if you're plan managing, perhaps even if you're NDIA managing, I don't know, and you have those conversations with your support workers, you can talk to them about how you want to use that time, and it might be to get them to cook for you.
Oh, and actually, yeah, that sort of reminds me, I really wanted to talk about holistic planning, and that's what this is about. That's why Crystal was talking before about that open questioning or open responses, where you're not being black and white about what you want, but you're actually having a conversation about your whole life and what you need to be able to make those various parts of your life fit together more seamlessly. Mm. And yeah, that cooking example is a good one, food preparation.
Can we go to Trudy, who was trying to ask a question a second ago?
Yep, thank you. My concern is people with multiple disabilities, you know, like deafblind, or, you know, they might be, I'm just using example, they might be in a wheelchair or they've got mental illness and whatever. I'm just wondering how they can be broken down more. Do they just focus on just one disability or multiple disabilities, and how they break it down and bring it all together, if you understand my question?
So as we were saying before, sometimes there is some challenges around getting the planners to recognise the, I guess, the functional impact of having a dual disability, whatever that might be. And so we're working on, you know, obviously advocating to the NDIA to recognise that and sort of be more...
this is where the appeals process really might come in.
Yeah.
And I've recently had to go through this with a family. Little boy had autism and got funding for blindness services, but nothing for autism. The therapy he was undergoing was really effective, but it was incredibly expensive. And so we argued that without the autism intervention, he wouldn't actually be able to make sense of the blindness intervention that he was being taught.
Mm.
So that's sometimes you've got to use those appeal processes at this point to make those linkages,
and have the people there who can help you to talk about it.
Mm.
I mean, you know, most of us are good at advocating, and we know the steps that we need to take. But when it's you, it's really hard.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I really can't emphasize that enough. Have people in there who are going to help you to get the point across that you want to, and, you know, not speak for you, basically. You don't want that.
Would you need to go as far as bringing in your educational...
Some people do. You can take whoever you want to your planning meeting, whoever you want. And that's the other thing. Some people have been told that you have to go to an office, you know, Centrelink office with NDIA officers in your nearest town, blah. You don't. They can come to you. So don't, yeah, just... push that point if you don't want to go somewhere that you're not comfortable.
Yeah.
You don't have to, because that increases the pressure.
And in fact, it's best that they see you where you're living and breathing and working every day.
Yeah.
Because it's your context.
Yeah, they say it's easier for them and they can get through more plans, but guess what?
Yeah.
It's about you. Okay, yep. Got a couple more minutes. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Jess. I've actually got more of a comment than a question.
Sorry, Jess, do you have a microphone?
Yes, I do. I wasn't
speaking
to it.
There you go, that's better. Thank you.
I said I have more of a comment than a question.
Yeah.
I haven't got my plan yet. I'm planning to work towards self-management, so half self-managed in my first year and hopefully fully self-managed in my second and third year. But what I'm going to be aiming to do is where I do need NDIA funded assistance, I'm wanting to get people with other disabilities to provide that assistance for me. And I'm going to be making that part of my plan, maybe not with the planners themselves, but in my life, making sure that other people with disabilities can do that work.
Mm. Yeah. And that's the other thing, isn't it? Really opens up the opportunity. What skills do we have that we can now share with each other and get paid for?
That's right.
You know, perhaps you've got a bit of a financy background and you can set up a plan management business, or, you know, you're really good on your technology and you can become a technology trainer. Really don't just think about, I get so excited about this. I'm really sad we've only got an hour.
Crystal, it's Chelsea.
Yeah, jump in.
Just wanted to add to something that Nemoy asked before. One thing I'm doing, and I'm still waiting for the NDIS to actually cover my area, but one of the things I've been doing is, particularly with kitchen, because that's been one of my things as well, is developing that, but also getting some help from an occupational therapist and looking at the types of devices that you can put under your NDIS plan if you need certain things to assist you in the kitchen. But I'm not sure about assistance with getting, you know, learning recipes and stuff. I guess that's part of that as well, but it depends who you want to do that. Yep. And also another bit of advice that I've been given in SA as well is really, if you really want to push to have a planning meeting face-to-face, because if you feel like you need the extra time to go through everything within your plan, you know, that's one of the options that you can take to not feel that you're rushed in doing that as well.
Definitely do it face-to-face if you can, in an environment that you're comfortable with.
Hi, it's Rocco. I've got the microphone, so my turn.
Quick, go.
I just wanted to make a few comments, just to touch back on some of them. So for Nemoy, I actually got approved for a capacity building item called food preparation. It wasn't, I didn't say that it was gourmet, I just said that I needed to learn how to use knives and so on and so forth. So I got approved for that. In relation to the person who said about, you know, taking their kids and picking them up for school, most of my plan is funding for that, because I've got two young kids. And then the other comment I want to make is that you can actually choose to self-manage just your core components, which is what I do. So I found that the supply of core components is probably where the choice is at the moment, whereas the supply of capacity building, which is like your traditional occupational therapy and excessive technology and O&M, there's not really a huge market out there anyway. So those kind of supports getting provided by the traditional, you know, Vision Australia, guide dogs, etc., is easier, and I don't have to manage invoices and stuff like that. And just for those people who, if they do want to self-manage, I do all my claims on my iPhone. You have to fill in three fields, press a button, it's done. It's pretty easy. I never get my computer out to do it, so that's just if people are thinking at how hard it is or how easy it is, that's my experience.
Yeah, thanks, Rocco. That's really great.
I've got the
Mic. Okay, Sandra, sorry. Then Graham, and then we're going to have to wrap up, I think.
Question, then, and then a comment as well. What advice do you have for people that are actually up to have their plans reviewed? We've talked about people in their first plan, and this is particularly important, I think, because there are a lot of unused plan or portions of plans that are unused, but nevertheless, this, through possibly no fault of the person's, but they still need that service carrying forward into future plans. And this is a problem with some service providers who can't accommodate a person out of hours because they've not built around that, even though you've been approved for funding out of hours. There was talk of, mentioned before, about engaging services like Higher Up and Better Care. I've been approved in my initial plan to have service if I wanted someone to go to a concert with me, because that's something that you can't easily do on your own. The service originally undertook to provide that, but then they couldn't get weekend staff, so they said, okay, so we'll contract the service out. Well, no, I don't want to go out with a random person that I've never met in my life to go to a concert. You want to go with someone with a common interest and you know is going, you know. So the problem is, if you're not using that service, it could well, the NDIA could turn around and say, well, you haven't used that package, part of your package, you're not having it next time. The second thing is just to let people know that those that receive a transport allowance under their package, if the plan runs out before it gets reviewed, your transport allowance will stop until your plan is reviewed and your next plan has the approval with the transport component in it. So while you're waiting...
I was
informed of that on Monday when I actually started jumping up and down true. About...
Okay, I'll have to... I hadn't heard that, so that's really interesting because what I thought it did was it split up the... if this is the mobility allowance, it sort of divides it into 12. So if you've got $3,000, it's 3,000 divided by 12. And you get that, or 26 or whatever it is, and you get that in sort of installments. So I will check that out because that's new information. Thank you. With regards to your other things, it's really important when you have your review to say, well, unfortunately, there wasn't a service that could fill this request this year, but it's still what I want to do. So it's not your fault that you haven't been able to find support to come to a concert with you. Your service provider doesn't do that. So, hey, is there, can you help me find someone that does?
Yep. Also bearing in mind that our needs are episodic.
Yeah.
So when our situations change, when we move into a new area, get a new job, need to go to a new place to volunteer, whatever the case may be, there are some times where we're going to need more funding than others. So we have to allow enough headroom, so to speak, to allow for those changes.
Right, yeah, and just to finish off, a lot of first plans that I'm aware of have perhaps not got started at the start date of the plan, so they might have taken a couple of months or even longer to get implemented. So that needs to be taken into account at the review point as well. Graham, what was your question? And then... Oh, yeah, can we grab a microphone? And then this will probably have to be the last one, unfortunately, guys. Yeah, sorry, quick. Steve. Okay.
My comment to Sandra is there's a service called Gig Buddies, which does exactly what you want.
There you go.
The second question, my question is quickly one to Rocco. Are you using it on an app or online when you self-manage? And my third question is, do you have to have a separate bank account that you use if you self-manage your plan?
Bank account question is no. You can have whatever bank account you want.
So I do it on Safari. There's no app.
There's no app.
The NDIS doesn't have an app, as far as I know.
Don't have an app.
So I just do it on Safari. And I do have a separate bank account because I just think it's easier to.
Yeah,
I reckon I would too.
But yeah, you can if you want, but you don't have to.
I change halfway through.
Okay. Yep, go Steve, and then we have to wrap up.
Yeah, thanks. Crystal, it's just a quick one. It's more about what's just been discussed recently in respect that, for me, one of the things that find it difficult to be able to do would certainly like to be more involved in. I've got a 3-year-old grandson and another one that's 13 days old or whatever it is, 2 weeks or something. I would like to be more involved in some of the things that he often approaches me to do, but does it with grandma because, you know, she can see and things like going down to the park and whatever. But how do you approach that? Because I'm not after a babysitter. I'm just after how do I do that, whether I have someone else that comes down, whether it be to the park or wherever. It's a whole independence thing, but being in a safe situation as well.
Yeah.
With him. That's that. Well, I just want to jump back to what, because I know it's been touched on with children from a couple of people. I'm hearing things from people like Rocco and so forth, and that, which is great information. I'll just conclude in saying, is there any way that we can get some of these information and, you know, things like the apps has been suggested, whatever, in some sort of frequently asked questions or case studies, whatever, so that they can be shared beyond convention with other people? Because a lot of it here, it's all right to try and remember, most of it I'll take notes, but yeah, it'd be good to have it somewhere. That'd be great.
Yeah, for sure. We'll definitely take that as a suggestion and we'll try and include some of that. Well, we will include a lot of this conversation in the resources that we develop, especially for the workshops, and they'll be available to people who aren't coming to the workshops too. I can put together a little list of some of the things we've talked about today and send that to everyone. And if I forget, just send it to me on an email. I'm pretty sure my email address is on the list.
In the future, there'd be an opportunity to have something like
Yeah, for sure. We need a part on the website or something. Yeah. And then just to can we perhaps, if anyone has any suggestions for Steve around his question about the supervision of his grandson, that sort of stuff, Rocco, if you could find Steve during afternoon tea or anyone else. I will too. I've got some suggestions.
I think we have actually a very important question that I crave your indulgence to.
All right, if everyone's... Does everyone want to? Because it's already 3:30. No, you do. You do, because we have a hearing loop.
Away. A person who's potentially going to have this issue with children and going out with someone, who's, and yourself managing the fund, who's responsible for checking that the person you're going if has working with children?
So this is, okay, I can answer that one really quickly. When you're self-managing, if you don't go through something like Better Care or Higher Up and you do just hire your own support people, then it's your responsibility to check all that. All, platforms like Higher Up and Better Caring do check all of their... they have to put all their references to register. They have to have references and qualifications and things like that. And you can choose only to hire people who have the working relevant working with children's checks and all those sort of things. So that's that one. I'm really sorry, guys. We're going to have to wrap up. It's afternoon tea time. So, Ricky, did you have any closing comments? And thank you all for your input. It's been great.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'm pretty much done. But, yeah, thanks, everyone. And, you know, this is an ongoing, evolving conversation, and no doubt we're going to have it for many years to come. So, yeah, thanks.
And please keep in touch with us. Yeah. Any other comments or questions, give us a call anytime. Thank you.